Shares in troubled Toshiba slipping in Tokyo Thursday as the company races to seal an $18 billion deal to plug massive losses and avoid a delisting on the stock exchange. On Wednesday, the company announced its preferred bidders for its successful chip business, a group including U.S. investment giant Bain Capital and Japanese government investors.
It's really interesting to see 6 million available jobs. That's the highest number they've seen on record since tracking the data like this specifically. You know, there's a lot of debate back and forth among economists. Is there a skill gap? Is there not a skill gap? But unquestionably, at the local level, there are skills gaps. There are cities that are hiring. They're hiring quickly. They've got fast-growing industries, and they don't have the talent with the requisite skills to take on those roles.
If you go on Amazon and you search for Nike, you get about 70,000 different items. If you take a couple of books that are written about Nike, there's still a lot of items there. None of them is being sold by Nike. If Nike is in Amazon, a lot of the other wholesalers are going to take a look at it and maybe going to go onto the platform.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's June 22nd, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We've got lots to talk about on the show today. A little bit later in the program, Women Who Code. We'll have the director of that organization with us a little bit later on. We'll have our thought leader conversation momentarily as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, off about 19 points now. NASDAQ futures and S&P futures are off by single digits this morning. Yesterday on Wall Street, declines in financial and energy shares sent U.S. and European equity markets mostly lower, weighed down in part by U.S. crude prices. At 10-month lows, U.S. Treasury yield curve hit its flattest in nearly a decade. This morning, crude oil is up about a half a percent at $42.81 a barrel. In Asia, markets are generally mixed, with the Nikkei off 28 points. Hang Seng is off about 20 points, and the Shanghai is off about 8 points. European markets are all lower this morning, with the FTSE off almost a half a percent. Same situation with the CAC. Both of those good for about 30 points each. The DAX is off about 35 points as well. Gold and silver are trading a little bit lower this morning. Some news we've been watching for you as you've slept overnight. American Airlines says it will change uniform suppliers after employers complained the uniforms were causing reactions from hives to wheezing. This is a story we've been following here on The Opening Bell. American told employees yesterday that it will not renew a contract with Twin Hill, a division of Houston-based Taylor Brands. That deal was to expire in 2020. The uniforms for 70,000 employees were announced with much fanfare last year, but the flight attendants union immediately started to begin receiving complaints about those, including some bad reactions that required a medical treatment. Also today, the Homeland Security Department plans to offer extra visas for temporary seasonal workers this summer. A DHS spokesman says the department hasn't decided how many will be offered. They're the H-2B visas, used for temporary non-agriculture workers at a variety of businesses, including resorts. It is Thursday. That means it's time for our thought leader conversation. Breck Hansen is with us today from Associated Bank. He's the vice chairman and former head of commercial real estate there at Associated Bank. We're going to talk a little bit this morning about how perhaps interest rates are impacting the economy, maybe even Brexit. Breck, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good to see you, as always. We had the interest rate hike this past week. It kind of happened without a lot of fanfare, and already people are saying it's going to be the last we see this year. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think that Janet Yellen's in a tough spot. But remember, Steve, that the Fed funds rate is still only 1.25, and so that if the people are talking about not another raise because of the implications, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but another 25 basis points isn't going to change a lot. I think it's more the cosmetics of it than the actual impact of it. We've got an interesting situation. We've got a situation where we've got as low of unemployment as we've had for several years, and normally when you see low unemployment, you see inflation. And we're not seeing the inflation. I've read a lot. I kind of think myself, and I've said this to you before, that a lot of the pent-up demand for spending relates to the uncertainty that we've got in the political situation right now, and if, in fact, Trump really can do some of the things that he campaigned on.
I know that Janet and the Fed want to see inflation at a 2% level. What are your thoughts about why we can't get it there, why it's not getting there? And is that the reason she's in trouble, because she's betting on that?
First of all, she's a smart lady.
Yeah. She's an expert in this kind of area.
And, secondly, I read, and I think it's very profound, that we make all these future decisions based on everything that's happened in the past. And we've got and when you look at the difference between inflation of 1.5 and 2, although that's not 2, it really isn't a whole lot different. And if we have a couple things break in terms of the Trump administration's plan, people start to free up their spending and not hold because of the uncertainty, I think that her bet's probably a pretty good one. And, we thought all along 2% isn't aggressive, but they've budgeted kind of along that 2% line for the last 4, 5, 6 years, and it hasn't happened.
In her news conference, she seemed very confident that we're headed in the right direction and things will go that direction. But I'm still seeing a lot of other analysts and experts question that. And I mentioned as we opened up here that they're also saying that this is probably going to be the last increase in interest rate hike this year because of all of these things, even though she thinks there may be more. What are your thoughts there?
I'm not an economist, yeah. And I'm not making those decisions. But I think it's, first of all, we haven't been right the last several years on any of these increases. But if this isn't the last increase, there'll probably only be one more, and we're talking 25 basis points. We certainly would like to see the economy kick a little bit, and this oil price situation the last few weeks or week or so has really changed some thoughts too.
Do you think geopolitical concerns, because we're not the only country that's sort of meandering in terms of politics. There are all kinds of things happening around the world, in Great Britain, in the European Union, the terrorism concerns in Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, that dispute with Qatar. Do you think that has any impact on any of this?
I'm a simple thinker. I think it probably has less now than it might have a year or two ago, just because everything you hear, we have become more internally focused. And I think that in terms of what we're doing with regard to imports and everything, the administration is focused on the U.S. and turning this economy around. And I think to focus more internationally, right or wrong, may not be what's going on right now. In fact, some of the international markets have done very well while we've our stock market, really, since that first up blip, hasn't moved nearly as quickly.
How do credit conditions impact productivity? And do you think that's having any impact on the things we've been talking about?
Well, the argument is you got to spend money to make money. And, most of these companies, run on leverage to spend that money, and leverage is the credit. So there's no question that productivity has suffered somewhat because of credit conditions. That being said, as long as demand is not as great and consumer spending is not as great, and purchase of new constructed homes or renovated homes is not as great, I really don't think the credit restrictions have played as big a part of this, at least now, as people want to lead you to believe it has.
There was the report I'm referring to is from the International Monetary Fund. It was a research paper that was put out that said some of the firms who do have big balance sheets are scaling back. They're thinking about scaling back, or are scaling back their plans for investment and further growth.
I think they're scaling back simply. I go back to my initial thought process is there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, and people still remember, it's not that long ago, 2007, 2008, that nest egg that was created for different people went away pretty quickly. And with the uncertainty of regulation and the kind of things that are going to happen, we just don't have the consumer spending that normally comes with the low unemployment rates that we seem to be enjoying now.
I saw a report recently that small business owners, even though they're optimistic about things happening with the economy, these are small business owners, they have no plans to hire any full-time staff over the next year. And then on the flip side of that, too, there were concerns they shared in a survey that was done of them. Why we're doing this stuff in secret with healthcare, while we're doing stuff in secret with tax reform, those are the kinds of things that get under their skin a little bit.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, small business owners have had to rearrange their labor staff strictly around the healthcare rules. And with, I go back to the word uncertainty, and I hate to be redundant, but with the uncertainty there, I think they're at a standstill in a lot of cases.
Let's talk, switch gears a little here and talk about their situation in Illinois as the General Assembly gets ready to start their special session. Still no budget here. We're going into year number three. What is the situation from a local standpoint like that due to the economy of the state and of Chicago?
Well, the economy of the state, like a lot of things, relies, I would guess, on confidence. And you can walk down the street and talk to anybody at any knowledge level, and there certainly isn't a lot of confidence in the state government, in the city government. There isn't, and frankly, there isn't a lot of confidence that we're going to get to a budget, and if, in fact, we do, if it's a budget that's realistic. You said it earlier to me today. Without a budget, any governor would have a difficulty getting elected. And so perhaps, like a lot of things, as they become urgent, they become more important. I have a feeling Governor Rauner might cooperate a little more to get that budget done if, in fact, he wants to get elected again.
Yeah, it's hard not to – don't want to get into the political weeds on this, but – you know, it's almost like three strikes and you're out. He's had – this is his third attempt now to get a budget, year number three. It would seem that, you know, we're in a situation where we have social service programs that are failing. Our universities are going down. The status of our bonds is almost at junk status. All those things weigh heavily in all parts of the state on the economy.
Yeah, and, you know, as it stands now – the state or states can't file bankruptcy unless, of course, Congress changes the rules. And, you know, we've talked before about Puerto Rico and actually that bankruptcy may be a good thing because it stops the music and gives people a chance to kind of reconstruct. Stay tuned, but that may be a solution for the state of Illinois.
Yeah, it would be something that Congress would have to do, but I'm seeing more and more stories, it seems, pop up. Every week I see a couple of different stories pop up about that possibility. Let's talk a little bit about how, for instance, with this state budget crisis, we're hearing that construction projects will stop if we don't get a new budget. We hear about this junk status that's going to happen July 1st. On a construction side of things, what happens when you have these projects that are funded and who knows, maybe even Associated Bank has provided funding for some of these things on some level too? You just kind of, we're left holding the bag.
Nothing good, and what I say is when you take collateral, I talk about construction projects in three ways. I says raw your collateral, your most valuable collateral is your completed project. Your second most valuable collateral are your raw materials, the pieces that go into that construction before you start construction. But then there's a category when you asset-based lend called work in process, and that's a construction projects that stopped. And we've all seen construction projects, whether they be road and bridge projects, whether they be buildings that are basically stopped and rusting in the middle of, and you basically have created no value. And in fact, in most cases, if projects sit, the expense to renovate them again and complete them becomes a multiple of what they originally should have costed. So,
you know, part of this too is just you have other places in the country looking at Illinois. I'm not on that side of the fence, so I don't know, but I would imagine they're looking at possible investment here with a wary eye.
You know what? I had an opportunity to go to a Chamber of Commerce lunch here in Chicago a couple weeks ago and heard the mayor speak. And, of course, he talked about the positive things, but we've had more moves into the city of Chicago in terms of major corporations, McDonald's being one, et cetera, than almost any major city in the country. So there still are some really dynamic things, and I think a lot of what has influenced our thinking is what's reported.
Yeah, and a lot of good things happening, too, with local corporations. We've done a lot of reporting this past week on Boeing selling a lot of their aircraft. United's helping out a little, buying some of the new 737 MAX 10s at the Paris Air Show. So the local corporations are doing well in that regard. They're seeing a lot of return, you know, maybe not from the Illinois economy, but from the national economy.
Well, and you've just touched on two industries, aircraft manufacturing and the airlines themselves, that this oil and gas situation has actually helped. I mean, their expenses are largely due to fuel, and these fuel cost reductions certainly have been a good thing.
Yeah, this new 737, they have that composite. It's made of that composite material now. The 737 MAX can fly 3,200 miles without refueling, which is tremendous in terms of saving fuel.
Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
That's basically all they have.
Well, Breck, what do you think about the Cubs? Are we in good shape going into the All-Star break or no?
I was there last night.
Yep.
My comment about the Cubs is that, having been a Cub fan most of my life, that if you told me we were two games over 500 on June 21st, I'd be a happy guy.
And World Series? Are you going to bet yet on the World Series this year?
You know, people have said, Steve, people have said that regardless of what happens, if we get back in because we're in this weak division, it's going to be anticlimactic. So I'm hoping for a Cubs-Boston or Cubs-Yankee World Series, and that wouldn't be anticlimactic at all.
I wouldn't see any way. I don't see any way how it could be anticlimactic. I mean, to have the Cubs in 2 years in a row, that's like it's like a dream.
It's still a dream.
Yeah. Brett, good to see you. Enjoy the Cubs, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Brett Hansen is the vice chairman and former head of commercial real estate at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page, and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's our Thursday edition of the opening bell. Glad you're here with us as we continue our pre-dawn business conversation this morning. It's called Women Who Code, an international nonprofit dedicated to inspiring women to excel in technology careers. And it's getting ready to relaunch its Chicago network. The inaugural event for the new Women Who Code Chicago Network is today. And we're happy to have with us the director on the opening bell this morning, Samia Pandey. And she's also an information technology director at Infor in Chicago. Samia, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being with us this morning. Tell us a little first about Women Who Code. Why does the group exist?
Okay, so you gave a pretty good introduction, but I'll just chime in. So we are a nonprofit, and we are dedicated to help women excel in technology careers. And our vision is that moving forward, we want to see women in all kinds of positions, like, you know, VPs and executives and leaders. And we work towards that. We provide programs and services that ensures that we help women realize their full potential in the field. And we do that through a lot of in-person events. And we have our weekly newsletter called Code Review, where we kind of talk about how women are doing in the field that helps inspire other people. And then we have leadership opportunities that they can take on, like I did, and that exposes them to a world of possibilities.
And so the inaugural event for the new Chicago Network is today. Tell us about the event. Who's going to be there?
So today it's sponsored by Capital One, who graciously agreed to partner us for the relaunch event. And today we are going to be introducing the directors. That's going to be me and three other amazing women. And then we are also going to be talking to the advisory board. And we're just going to talk to the people and show them that we are ready to get this started, what we have in store for them. And we have invited women from all over the greater Chicagoland area to come and just hang out with us. And we want to listen to what they have to say about what they want from us, what kind of events, what kind of support. And it's going to be a fun evening. There's going to be giveaways and swag. So it's going to be a fun night.
And Pete, there's still availability. So people, if they're listening now and hadn't made plans to come, can they still, is there still room and time to come?
Absolutely. So if they want to sign up, they can just Google Women Who Code Chicago meetup, and that's going to be probably the first thing that comes up. If they are unable to RSVP, they can come directly to our event, which is at 77th West Wacker Drive on the 22nd floor. That's the Capital One's office space. And we'll have volunteers in the lobby who would be able to sign them up, and they can come right up.
Samia, talk to me about the importance of mentoring, not only networking, but mentoring in this field. I'm guessing this is going to focus on both of those things. Why is that important?
I'll give you a personal example. So I'm starting out as a woman in tech, right? And I feel like there's only so much you can gather online about what you can do. But once you have that personal interaction with someone who's already done that and who's successful, you gather more information and you're inspired more. So I think it's really important for women to understand that there's a network out there and there's mentorship out there that they can leverage to kind of understand what all they can do. If you look at the statistics, it's kind of sad that out of 56% of women workforce in the U.S., only 20% are in the IT field. And the retention rates are so low, like once you progress in the careers, women drop out so easily. And that's probably because they don't get the right kind of mentorship. And so we aim to kind of increase those numbers, and we want those numbers to be 50%, you know, 1:1. And we know that this kind of personal interaction and mentorship will help women get there.
The group Women Who Code has about 100,000 members or more in 60 cities and 20 countries. So that's growing as well. What are the challenges for businesses here? Do they have a responsibility to increase the ranks of women in the area of coding and in their technical presence?
Absolutely. And it's not just the businesses. If you look at the world today, it's been a challenge for everyone, you know, how to kind of let women move forward and not be affected by the bias that exists. And speaking of businesses, we need diversity. If we don't have diverse point of views, we are not as creative as we should be. We are not coming up with the best solutions. We are not creating products and designs that are meant for everyone to use. Think of it this way, like if you don't have a diverse perspective and if a certain group designs a product, it's probably going to be useful only for that certain group, right? And if you look at the statistics, if the return on investment for businesses that include more women is much higher, around 35%. So even from a business perspective, the companies and organizations need to understand that there's a huge need for diverse perspectives. And it's not only going to be useful in terms of what they deliver to the customers, it's important for their businesses as well. And it's important for people, young girls and kids out there who are seeing, okay, who is the CEO of this amazing company or who is the board members, you know, like the impact Wonder Woman has right now so many young girls see that and they're like, okay, we can be superheroes. So same way, if they see more women in tech or in, you know, executive positions like that, it will inspire them that they can do that too.
Yeah. There is some bright spots too. Are you happy to see that coding has become more a part of education now, especially in younger grades where some young kids and especially girls are learning how to code?
Yeah, and I'm so happy to see that. I mean, when I was in school, it was not as prominent, but now I see that it's almost become a part of education. And the Obama administration, kind of pointed out that coding has to be something fundamental that's taught in school. And it's right. We are moving to a technology future. Right now, we are talking to each other using something that's built with technology. So we cannot avoid, you know, being a part of technology some or the other how. Not everyone has to be a software developer. You can be so many other things. Like, I'm a technical consultant with Infor, and I do programming, but it's not as intensive as other people's job is. But at the same time, what we want is for everyone to be technically literate, you know, to be able to talk about that and to be able to understand and realize that there's potential in the field and they can do so much.
And coding is becoming another language that all of us probably need to learn how to speak.
Exactly. That's what I meant by being technically literate. It's like every time I talk to my mother, and she's 56 years old, but she's always interested. She's like, how do you build this website? And I tell her the basics, and she's always more curious about it. So, you know, it's something that everybody needs to learn. At some of the other levels, but especially for kids, because the coming generations is going to be, their lives is going to be more integrated with technology, and there is no way out of it. You know, you have to know what technology is surrounding us.
Soumya Pandey is the director at Women Who Code. Soumya, thanks for being with us this morning.
It was my pleasure.
And the event, again, the Chicago Network of Women Who Code, the event tonight at Capital One. We'll link out some information to that. You can also find more online at womenwhocode.com/Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:52 now, and on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street. We're watching the numbers head in the upward direction, so at least that's good. Dow futures now down 10 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures off just a couple of points each. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In that pork market yesterday, USDA said pork prices were up $2.24 a hundredweight to $101.09. That's the highest since October of 2014. Pork bellies climbed $5.22. to the highest level since April of 2014. However, cash prices for hogs in the Midwest edged lower in both Iowa and southern Minnesota. Meanwhile, live cattle futures ended 55 cents lower at $115.35 a pound, holding above Tuesday's nearly two-month lows. And feedlots in Texas sold cattle on Thursday at about $122 per hundredweight, and in Kansas at $123. Those sales were down $8 to $9 from a week ago. Meanwhile, the grain market, wheat futures down nearly 2%. After hitting their highest level in a year, traders taking another look at weather and the extent to which hot, dry weather might dent a global market already filled with record wheat inventories. Corn and soybean futures also declined. Forecasts for good growing weather in the Corn Belt. July wheat settled down 8 cents, July corn down 1 1/4, and July soybeans fell 9 cents to $9.18 3/4 a bushel. That's your money. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Outlook this morning for this Thursday, June 22nd, 2017, the Labor Department releases weekly jobless claims. Last week, Labor reported the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits had fallen for a second straight week. That's further evidence of the strong labor market. Freddie Mac has weekly mortgage rates out today. Long-term U.S. mortgage rates edged up last week as the benchmark 30-year rate bounced back from a 7-year low. Mylan holds its annual shareholder meeting in the Netherlands today, and at stake are key director jobs and pay packages. Mylan, of course, the drug producer that makes the EpiPen, has faced a growing public relations battle after a sharp increase in the allergy treatment prompted a Congressional and Justice Department investigation into overcharging the CEO and president's position, as well as the chairman's pay, are all at stake from that meeting. Also today, Federal Reserve releases results from the latest supervisory stress test conducted as part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, June 22nd.